Speaking of passion, I got some folks in here that have a passion for teaching, a passion for education. They are part of the organization Teach for America. And since this is spring break, we kind of thought we never get to talk to teachers because during the summer, they're off disappearing somewhere. And during the school year, they better be in the classroom, even though we've heard that this radio program is the number one program in teacher break rooms in schools all across the metropolitan area, because the teachers be listening and trying to find out the caller's going to call and talk about the administrators at their school. But anyway, we have some real classroom teachers. And we want to get an insight from classroom teachers. What do they face? Teach for America teachers are men and women who go into not Park Tutor. They do not go to Hamilton Southeastern. They do not go to the schools where the floors are inlaid in gold. They go to the schools where the need is, the schools where our kids need the best. So we have in the house today Brittany Langdon. She's a fifth grade teacher over at KIPP. We have Adam Jones, who teaches 11th and 12th grade English at Indy Metropolitan High School. We have Jadon Hemingway, who is a middle school English teacher at Fall Creek Academy. We have Stephen Philly, who teaches social studies. Oh, is he going to have some stories to say when he gets back on Monday, over at Arlington, the Arlington High School. And we have Keith Thomas, who teaches at the Indiana Math and Science Academy. He looks like a math guy, too. He teaches 5th and 7th grade. Patrick O'Donnell is also here. He's the executive director of Teach for America. But I want to first talk to teachers. Guys, welcome. Glad to have you.
Thank you.
What is the biggest challenge that face all of you in the classroom today? I mean, what is the thing in the classroom that keeps you up at night? The reason I kind of phrase it that way, you know, the listeners, you know, are always weighing in on, you know, the standardized tests, and we hear about the pressure, you know, that your bosses put on you, that you better get to, you, everybody better pass I-STEP. If you don't pass I-STEP, you in deep trouble. And it's like, it's more pressure than I feel, you know, when I get the ratings. And so, you know, what are the biggest challenges the teachers face? Let me start with Brittany, because you're closest to the microphone right now. Brittany, what's the biggest?
For me, one of the biggest challenges that I kind of keeps me up at night and is really what I think about is that I've been teaching now for 4 years in Indianapolis, and the fact that I still have kids coming in several years behind is just the biggest challenge. There are day in, day out challenges, but the biggest thing that kind of rocks me is just the reality of where my kids are, and that my sole job is to bring them to where they need to be and help them get the education that they deserve. And I think for me, that's the biggest challenge, because no matter what, everything kind of just comes back to my kids.
Jadon, what keeps you up at night? What's the biggest challenge? No, that's right. That's yours right over there. There you go.
Got my own.
That's the one real governors get to talk on that one. There you go.
For me, Amos, the biggest challenge is just understanding my span of control and realizing that as a teacher, it is my responsibility to control the four walls of my classroom.
When you say control, break that down.
Absolutely.
What do you mean by that?
So just understanding some of the struggles and challenges that the students I serve face outside of the classroom, and realizing that while I can have a tremendous impact on their academic achievement, understanding that some of those challenges can also inhibit them from being successful. And so just using my power to control what I can and getting them to where they need to be academically, and not necessarily worrying about those things that I can't control.
Adam Jones.
Brittany spoke to some of the academic challenges, and those are very real. Another challenge that I see every day is that students are very talented, but they often don't realize that they do have what it takes to succeed. And so something we work on every day is that it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to take chances. And they have what it takes to be successful.
Stephen Philly, right on this mic over there.
So I couldn't agree more with what Jadon said. Being a first-year teacher and kind of realizing what I can control as a teacher within my classroom, and then just trying to work my hardest to worry about that. Because I'm going to be honest, being a first-year teacher, my biggest problem is not having enough hours in the day. So kind of realizing that, okay, I have to focus on this in my classroom, and then that is it to best prepare my students for the next step, whatever that is, and that's my biggest challenge.
Let me ask you, as a first-year teacher, in Arlington. Mm-hmm. Did what you learned in college prepare you for Arlington? And assuming it didn't, how did you learn?
Well, I've been really fortunate. So I work actually in the Diploma Plus program at Arlington High School.
Now, what's that?
It's a program that it reengages learners in their education. So students that have maybe dropped out for whatever reason, taken a couple years off, had issues outside of the classroom that have prevented them from going to school. Mm-hmm. This program takes them back in the classroom. We have some accelerated curriculum courses that allow them to recover their credits faster, okay, so they could get back on track to graduate when they were supposed to originally. And I have a lot of veteran teachers that I work with and on my floor and in my building that have been just such a huge support. And they've kind of taken me under their wing, knowing that I'm a first year, because they believe in the program, they believe in the school, and they believe in the students. So they don't want to see them fail because me being a first year teacher, I don't know what I'm doing.
So you admit that?
I admit that. When I walked in the classroom, yeah, they were a huge help getting where I needed to be day one.
Did your students look at you like experienced linebackers in the NFL, looking at you like Andrew Luck and say, he's a rookie, I'm going to get him?
I think maybe a little bit, but being a taller guy definitely helped in the classroom the first day. Being 6'2", definitely helped. But yes, the students are very smart. They know what to expect, and they're used to having experience in the classroom. So, yes.
Keith Thomas, what keeps you up at night? What are the...
I have to say the biggest challenge is just the unpredictability of the students. As a teacher, there are so many different things that we can't control. So kind of like what Judon said earlier, how students come in with a lot of things on their minds and chest. It might be from home, but it might be from something that happened earlier in school. So... just it's always a hit or miss to have the perfect conditions that I would think would be ideal for learning. So,
is parent involvement good at your schools, or does it leave much to be desired from your point of view? In other words, of the students you teach, do you see every parent? Do they all come in, or is this problem of parental involvement, like universal, because there's a mix of schools here and types of schools. From your point of view, is parental involvement there, or this is an issue that we've got to resolve as a community? Judon?
Well, in my experience, my parents are pretty readily involved. I think the biggest challenge to that, though, is having parents understand their options and understand not the value of education, but what we are offering as individual schools. And I think unless you have that knowledge, you're less prone to engage, and you can't advocate for your student if you aren't involved.
Is part of that the difference in the education the parents had when they went through school and what you're teaching their kids now is the difference between night and day? And for the math folks here, I do not, whatever this algebra is y'all teaching, I don't remember that back when, Lyndon Johnson was, I do not remember that. And I think a lot of parents and grandparents really don't grasp what you're teaching because either A, we don't remember learning it, or if we learned it, it ain't what y'all are teaching. Is that a problem? That you don't be shy. If you feel any, you can grab a mic here in my classroom.
I'll take that one.
I don't want her to take up all the time. Just don't be shy.
So I think that's part of it, but I think that as a teacher, it's our responsibility to create an environment where parents, community leaders, and guardians feel comfortable having those conversations. Mm-hmm. And I think it starts with being humble first. So in my classroom, I try to do that. So making partnerships with parents are that much easier. I've had parents come to me and say, "Miss Hemingway, I have no idea what this assignment is asking." And because they're comfortable with having that conversation, then we can fix it for that student. But I think in cases where parents aren't comfortable, that could absolutely be the case and negatively impact the student's experience.
Adam is nodding his head. You're over at the Met School and the students you have, you got all different types of students, some of which the parent isn't involved because they, are over 18 and they're trying to do what they need to do. In terms of this, how is involvement over there? Because you're at a little different type of school.
Well, the first thing I would say is we have many parents who are very involved. I think you alluded to something which is very powerful, which is sort of that there's a possibility to be intimidated. That maybe things have changed and that the education that students are receiving today are so different from maybe what was the case 20 or 30 years ago, that there's a hesitance to become engaged. And we were talking before we came in. One of the things that makes our day is when we have a phone call or an email from a parent. And that openness, when that open line of communication is established, we're able to do so much in that partnership. So we would just all, I'm sure, I think we would all nod to that, encourage people to reach out because we love hearing from community members and families.
You know, I think sometimes parents think, oh, wait a minute, a teacher has, you know, 30 students in, you know, in one class. If it's at the elementary level, if it's at the middle and high school level, you may have 100 kids over the course of, you know, they don't have time to listen to me or, you know, get that feedback. How critical is that feedback, is that interaction with parents, either by voice, either face-to-face or electronically? Y'all don't be shy, because I'll start calling on y'all. And this could be part of the evaluation.
So one thing I think that is incredibly important in building relationships with parents, I think as a teacher, I always try to stick myself out there first. My parents know that my kids have my cell phone number. I'm available to help with homework at night. I'm always available in a text message, in an email, to get a hold of them and talk about any concerns that they could possibly have about their children. I try and encourage parents to come in as much as possible. I know kind of what Judon had talked about earlier, that sometimes things are different now, and there is kind of a learning curve, and I invite parents to come in. I actually had a student, we were working on memoirs last week, which is difficult for fifth grade, and I actually had a parent come in and sit because they were kind of confused about what was going on. So they came in into the classroom and just sat
You're
in.
Teaching in memoirs in the fifth, because that's
we're
like,
very advanced, Amos.
Because but when people are listening to that, that's teaching writing mm-hmm. and reading and comprehensive.
And reflection. And
how much of education today is what I would call bundling? And that's probably not the correct mm-hmm. term, but using different types of skills in one project.
I think that's just how people learn. It's okay. Kind of what I
that's,
think
about. That's the yeah, way that's, it is today.
Everything kind of comes in at the same time. And I don't think kids get as much out of if we sit down and we're going to teach algebra today. And mm-hmm. tomorrow we're going to teach something else. And it has nothing to do with the algebra we did the day before. And that's just not the reality of education or learning. So that's kind of when I plan my lessons, that's kind of what I think about.
239-1310. Let me go to the phones. And Anonymous, those pick up your headphones. Those of you close. This is like multimedia here. And go to Anonymous. Hi there.
Hey, Amos, how are you?
I'm fine.
Let's see. I'm with one of the townships, you know, and your forum today is awesome, and I don't want to sound rude or anything, but it just seems like the teachers, some of them I know, and I think they're awesome, but I think we're being politically correct. Because I have taught at the state level, I've taught at, you know, like I said, townships, Marion County Jail too, and I guess some of the issues that I've seen and witnessed in the classroom today, it's so difficult or challenging to get to the academics because you have to deal with the behaviors.
Okay.
You have to deal with the disrespect. And by the time you're there sometimes, you know, when you have the class settled, the bell rings, and I'm not hearing some, I don't want to say they're not telling the truth, but you're not hearing some of the real.
Oh, you want the room 227. You want the Mr. Novak. You want, can they handle the truth?
We know we have gang activity in the classroom.
You want to know, can these teachers handle the truth?
Right. And I know that it probably has to be politically correct. You know,
nobody's ever.
This is 2012.
These
kids are off the chain.
All right. Let me get the teacher's reaction. The caller brings up something that, you know, I think people in the audience perceive, believe, may know firsthand. One of the colloquial terms in the African American experience is from the late comic Robin Harris, Bebe's Kids. You know, is some of your students Bebe's kids? And if so, how do you deal with Bebe's? Those of you young teachers don't know that. We'll explain that to you during the break, or maybe some of the listeners will call at 239. This is called multicultural education here. How do you deal with that? First of all, is that real, what the caller talks about? I'm going to start over here with the brothers and sisters here. Judon, is that real?
Absolutely. I think
Have y'all been politically correct holding off on that? And if
I don't know that we've been holding off on it, but what I will say is, as a new teacher, behavior was something that was especially challenging in the beginning of the year. What I've learned in my experience, though, is that our kids, even Bebe's kids, right? If you set high expectations for them, they will absolutely meet and exceed those expectations. So when we talk about behavior, if from the beginning of the year you've established a culture in your classroom where we are not going to let behavior stand in the way of
give the listeners
learn
a real example of that, because I'm hearing the words, but I think the listeners would want to know from a teacher, how do you set expectations? Is it coming in like Jack Nicholson in one of the movies? John Wayne, this is how we're going to do it. How do you do that?
I think it's about teaching kids how to do school. So whether that means from the first week, right, we're not going to try and dive into content and getting you to understand what a metaphor and a simile is in English. Instead, I'm going to teach you how to put your binder away appropriately. I'm going to teach you how to line up quietly. And if you can't do that, we do it over and over again until you get it. And so whether that is something as simple as putting a binder away or teaching you not to throw a textbook across the classroom, by the time we've established this culture, you will get it. And so that stuff won't stand in the way of what I need to teach you.
Keith Thomas?
I would say that's definitely a reality with some students, but just like any profession or any professional, like you're never going to have ideal circumstances to deal with your job. So on a radio talk show, I'm sure it's things that you have to deal with that if you had them perfect, then it'd be better for you, but that's not the case. So it's just a part of being a professional, being a teacher, being an educator, and
But if somebody, you know, steps to you, if somebody challenges you in your classroom, how long do you let it go before, bam, action's going to be taken?
It varies with me. It just depends on the severity of the situation because it just depends on the situation. Some things cannot be tolerated and students have to recollect themselves outside of their classroom or something like that. But other things, you have to just get a feel for your students and know who they are, their personalities and things like that, so you get to know who they are and when they're actually being more aggressive or more out of line than usual.
Stephen, young teacher at Arlington, and their listeners that are going, I know Arlington's off the hook, off the chain. You know, they probably, you know, saw you. That's a new teacher. We gonna show him who. How do you establish, you know, that you're the teacher and they're the students?
Being consistent was big with me. And that's something that I have to reemphasize after every break as well when we're getting back into it. And Judon spoke to it a little bit. Just teaching school and how to act in the classroom is huge. Are there times when something happens or there's, you know, a certain amount of things happening in one class where a student is dismissed? Yes, that's a reality. But I don't want to, you know, take one student's opportunity to learn for a day away, but I also don't want the other students in the classroom that are there doing the right thing to, you know, have their experience in the classroom for that day taken away by that other student.
Is discipline a big problem? Is it something that we, as a community, we need to deal with? And you know, I think the caller, we're having conversations that we rarely have when superintendents come and on this program and talk. They ain't bringing this up. They're not coming and saying, we got some discipline problems in our school, Mr. Brown, and we really need the community. You know, they are not telling me that story. I mean, you guys are out there on the firing line. I think that, you know, the community, if this is an issue that we need to face as a community, we need to know that. And if it isn't, then tell me that too.
I wouldn't say that it's necessarily discipline problems. I would say it's maybe expectation problems and making sure that everybody's on the same page and knowing, okay, like these are the expectations in the classroom.
239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoons and Amos. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with the teachers. Well, we'll talk about test pressure. We'll also talk about somebody who didn't want to go on the air and it says, how are some of the teachers getting ready for the school being taken over by the state? Must be talking about you. And how is that any different, if any change for them? Yeah, they talking about you. 239-1310. And we'll also find out from Patrick O'Donnell what Teach for America is all about. It's After News with Amos. We're talking with teachers tomorrow. Teachers ought to be listening in our second hour. The prosecutor's office is going to come in and talk to us about another subject folks don't want to talk about in polite company, gangs. What is a gang? And does it mean that those kids dressed in Kentucky outfits in Lexington, was that gang-related activity? Because seem to me, if you all dressed in Kentucky blue and you flip a car over and burn it, that ought to be gang-related activity. But we'll talk to our Marion County prosecutor tomorrow about gangs. But today we're talking about our classroom teachers. It's After News with Amos After These. Welcome back. 239-1310. 239-1310. It's After News with Amos. We've got classroom teachers Brittany Langdon with KIPP, Adam Jones with Indy Met, Jadon Hemingway with Fall Creek Academy, Stephen Philly with Arlington, Keith Thomas with Indiana Math and Science Academy. Now, Stephen, you're over at the school that come the end of the school year. It goes from IPS to my good friends over at Tinley. Have you made a decision? Are you prepared to announce what you're doing next year, or do you know?
I do not know. My hopes to stay with IPS and with the program I'm working for now, Diploma Plus, but no. I do not know yet.
You do not know. So you don't have any choice in your fate?
No, I do not. We get evaluated, and then we let them know whether or not we want to stay with IPS, and I said yes, and then they let us know.
Okay.
Soon, I hope.
If you're listening over at Tinley, would y'all make up your mind about this brother over here? Anyway, 239-1310, 239-1310. Tests. The standardized. I was in a meeting last week. And the state was talking about how there's going to be a replacement to ISTEP in a couple of years that will be key to the national standards that Indiana follows. And so I raised my hand and said, is this going to be a harder test than ISTEP? And the state superintendent of public instruction said in kind of educator ease, you know, the metrics and blah, 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 blah. I said, oh, it's going to be harder. And some of the media that were there took that as, oh, my goodness, it's going to be harder. How much pressure is on you in terms of the performance of your students on ISTEP or at the high school level on the end of course completion, the ECAs? How much pressure is on you guys? Oh, now it got real quiet up in here.
Well, the pressure is very real at the school level. It's how we're held accountable, how we'll be graded. Part of how we'll be graded as schools in the future with new rules. But really for us as classroom teachers, it's about the young men and women we know who have to take these exams to graduate. So that's the real pressure, seeing their faces every day and knowing that you're giving them your very best efforts and helping them get past that level of proficiency so that they're able to graduate.
How do you prepare them for that? Because let's be realistic. You can take 1,000 students and some of those 1,000 are not going to test well. That does not mean that they do not know the material. They just are not good testers. Is it harder to deal with those students when the numbers come back, when the results come back, and they didn't make it, as opposed to those that really didn't know the material and you kind of knew they weren't going to make it anyway? How do you deal with that? Because not every 100% of the students are not going to pass any test, even if it was open book, guaranteed win night. It's just the reality.
Well, Amos, I would say that it is a responsibility of the classroom teacher to teach not just the content or the material that is being tested, but to also prepare our students to have the skills necessary to successfully take any test, right? So the ECA or ISTEP, those certainly aren't the last tests they're going to be taking, especially if they are going on to college, which is what we expect. Mm-hmm. So we need to be teaching students how to manipulate the test in a way that it makes more sense to them and understanding the way that test questions are worded. Those are all skills that students in the schools that we serve don't necessarily have. I think it's the simplest way I can say it is our students don't know how to play the game of test taking. And by playing it, I don't mean I don't know, trying to beat it, but they're just intimidated by it because it's a test, mm-hmm. regardless of the content.
Do we make too much of it and put too much pressure on kids? Because kids aren't dumb. They watch television. They hear the news, maybe, and then they hear the discussion. I step this, I step that. If you don't pass this test, you know, there are consequences.
I think, Amos, one thing I always think about with test taking is that my ultimate job is not to get you to take a test. My ultimate job is to get you to where you need to be successful in the future. And so I think one kind of thought I always go into preparing kids for taking ISTEP is that this is not the end-all be-all. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, a lot of my students have extreme test anxiety because it's always been presented as black and white. It's you pass, you don't pass, one or the other. And I think so much of what it is also just celebrating success and thinking through, like, you may not have passed, but realistically, you came into my class on a third grade reading level. A mm-hmm. fifth grade ISTEP is going to be difficult. And so thinking through, like, making sure we put the whole year in perspective and not just, you passed this one test, good, bad, indifferent, you're done.
Should the community then evaluate your schools on the basis of what Brittany just said? Because those of us in the media, you know, when we get the ISTEP scores come June and July, I'm going to sit here on this program and go, here are the schools that our kids did well. Here are the schools that our kids, with some exceptions, you know, the med school, I got to look at it from a different perspective because of the types of students that are there. A school that starts up new, whether it's an element, whether it's a regular school or a charter school, I got to look at it. You know, differently, you know, a school that may have been the previous year. See, I'm from the old school. If you were like at 30% here and you go to 50%, to me, there ought to be a parade because mm-hmm. to me, that's progress. But the policymaker, well, you didn't pass. And that's, not, you know, so is part of this how we in the community set the expectations? Are we setting the wrong expectations?
I think, Amos, one of the big things I think of, just the same as I don't set the expectation for my kids that you either pass or fail ISTEP, and mm-hmm. therefore you passed or you failed my class for the year. I think it's more multifaceted than that. I think right. ultimately, if I was a doctor, I would be expected to perform, and if I can't perform a surgery, I shouldn't be a doctor anymore. Mm-hmm. So I think I do believe that part of what I do should be evaluated based on test scores, because at the end of the day, the reason I'm in the classroom is the kids in front of me. And if they can't do what they need to do to be successful, then that kind of has an impact on what I'm doing. Additionally, though, I think that there has to be some sort of like growth measure as well, that it's not just cut and dry for ISTEP. So I right. think it's more multifaceted than that. But at the end of the day, I think that, yes, I do need to be evaluated in many ways.
239-1310 is half the news name we're talking with, you know, the teachers from Teach for America. I got a lot of parents and grandparents that are listening. What are the things they can do with their students that help you do your job better? Here we go. Keith done grabbed my microphone.
One thing I could say that will help the students and the teachers alike, and the parents as well, or the parents and the guardians, is I would like for, if at all possible, that the guardians do come into the classroom and get perspective of what's actually going on, because they know their students better than we do. They had them all their life, and just for them to get perspective and see how they are in the classroom and see how things go on in the classroom.
Go sit in the classroom.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. And just come see how things go on a daily basis, because a lot of time they get one side of the story, and it's just it'd be better informed if they see what's going on a day-to-day basis.
Does it, you know, some parents might think, wait a minute, if I sat in the classroom, my kid's going to know I'm there, so they're going to clean up their act, and that doesn't necessarily mean the act is clean when I leave.
Yeah, and you're entirely right about that, because I've had parents come in before, and the students are angels. But you still just get a feel for the environment of the classroom. So if you come in the classroom, your student's good, but you see that their friends and stuff are acting out or showing out a little bit, you got to understand this, look ahead and see, well, if I wasn't here, they mm-hmm. would be engage in those type of activities too. So just to get a feel for the culture and the environment of the classroom that your students are in.
So from where you go, and all of your schools allow parents to come in and sit in the classroom?
Yes. Okay. All right. I speak for myself.
All right. So now those of you that are listening and you tried to go in a classroom with the school and they didn't let you in, you know, I'm going to be mad. And these are, you know, these the advice of these teachers that that's something that that ought to be done. 239-1310. 239-1310. The other thing that we hear a lot about is, yeah, and I think some of you all talked about it, motivating, setting high expectations for your students. So there's one school of thought in the African American community that one way you do that is by giving African American students some idea of their self-worth, who they are, you know, how others have been successful, and you point out those role models to try to get African American students to exceed. Do you agree with that? If so, how do you try to get that kind of information if you happen not to be African American? You know, is that something useful?
Well, I am African American, but I suppose I can speak to this question. I think it is absolutely useful. And from my perspective as a classroom teacher, I think it's especially important for the students I serve to see someone like me in that capacity. But I also think that regardless of whether the teacher is African American or not, or if there are role models in place that are African American or not, I think if you are setting high expectations and letting students know that they can achieve things, I think that that is what's most important. And I can probably speak for all the teachers in the room when I say that we share that value, and that it's about setting high expectations regardless of your background and helping students understand that they too can have success.
How important is taking a positive example from contemporary life as we go and use that positive example to tell your students, hey, you might have seen on television or you heard about such and such doing well. Here's an, you know, and use that as part of teaching. How critical is that? Bringing in what the student may know or understand. Not sure.
I think one of our great tools that we can use as teachers is to make our teaching relevant. Mm-hmm. And so if we can bring in a contemporary example of someone who's really been successful or served their community or given to their community with their time or their money or their efforts, I think that all those contemporary examples and opportunities lend themselves to a great teachable moment for us.
So it's something like an African-American who grew up here in Indianapolis, went to North Central High School, now is getting ready to be the CEO of Mickey D's, and I think every one of your students at least once in their life have been into Mickey D's. Something like that help or could tie into a particular lesson to say, hey, you know, does that help?
Absolutely. I think because then it becomes real for the student and it isn't some just abstract idea of success, but they see this person as very much like them and they feel like they could also make those strides.
Let me go to Anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi.
Hi.
On the SAT test, if a student is getting good grades and then take that test and don't do too well on it, does that affect their, you know, moving further, or does it hold them back?
That's a good question. What kind of scores have they gotten on the SAT?
Oh, I'm not sure. This is just a general question. And I wanted to know, do they know of any teacher, or would they themselves be able to pass that SAT test? And if they didn't pass it, do they still feel like they would be eligible to be a teacher?
I think, first of all, the SAT and the ACT are the only tests around where there is no passing score or failing score.
Okay.
You get 400 points just by signing your name on the paper.
Okay.
And the maximum score is 1,600. So you get 400 just by showing up at the door.
Okay.
And there really isn't, unlike ISTEP, and I think that sometimes confuses people, with ISTEP you hear about passing or failing. Nobody passes or fails SAT or ACT.
Well, ISTEP is probably what I had in mind.
Oh, you had it? Yeah. ISTEP, now let me, I'll rephrase her question. Rephrase it again with ISTEP. Say it again.
If a student has, you know, good grades.
Good grades. And doesn't pass an ISTEP.
And doesn't pass an ISTEP. How does that affect them?
All right, it's a great now that's a great real world question. So if the student, if your students, Brittany, don't pass I-STEP, but they're doing well, they're progressing in the work that you're assigning them, does the fact that they didn't maybe make part of the I-STEP, you know, diminish them in your eyes?
I don't think it diminishes anything or diminishes the work they gave during the year. I can only speak to my school, and I'm not an expert in this by any means, but I know that that is not the only thing we look at. Mm-hmm. So, like, there are many factors that go into a student passing or failing. We look at attendance. We look at grades. We look at I-STEP and try and get – and also we look at growth. Like, if they progress from a third grade to a fifth grade reading level, Amos, I think that should have a parade in and of itself. But we look at a lot more than just I-STEP. But I know that that's my school. I don't know if you all have a different take on that.
And you're the Brittany, I think you and Keith, because he's got some fifth graders in there. You're the ones closest to third grade, mm-hmm. and third grade has this test that I'm dreading the results coming back probably in a couple of weeks on iReads. Because that's one with very hard consequences that have everybody scratching their head how this is going to work. Is there a lot of angst in your building about what's going to happen with iRead? Because this is a whole different scenario. Because this holds a kid back.
I don't know personally as much about that because KIP is fifth grade through eighth grade. So we don't have third grade. Right. But just from kind of the research I've done, I'm unsure about how schools are reacting to kind of the new iRead format.
Oh, we can't wait for these results. Thank you, Anonymous. Let me go to Angela, then we'll take a break. Hi, Angela.
Hi, how are you doing?
We're fine.
I have a question. I have junior high students. I have actually three, two eighth graders and a seventh grader, and they attend Washington Township. Mm-hmm. And I've looked into KIP and the other charter schools as far as their education, especially with the having the choice of choosing where they go. And going with Washington Township, I stayed there because of how my kids were involved. But one big problem I'm finding out is that I have a daughter, and she's excellent. She's an African-American scholar, peer mediator, high honor roll student. No one ever calls me or sends a letter home about any of that. But once, when she was involved in some he say, she say, I had about four teachers that felt relevant enough to call me about that. And I just think teachers as a whole got to give the kids the accolades for the positive things. They don't get that a lot. And it really affects my daughter, and that's why I wanted to speak about it, because I've seen her attitude change. And you know, nobody was saying, Angela, you're a good student. Well, her name's Angela, too, but they wasn't saying that. They were all focusing on this one negative incident.
That's a great point. How important is it not only to tell the student when they're doing well, but don't assume that student's going to go home and tell mom, dad, grandma, and grandpa that they did well? How important is it to give an attaboy and an attagirl to your students and then let the parents know?
My school, at the Diploma Plus program in Arlington, we actually have like an honor roll celebration once a semester, and we invite parents and family and close friends to come and celebrate with the students that have got above a 3.0 GPA or have perfect attendance.
Oh.
And that's really, this semester I've noticed, like after having the honor roll celebration, has really, you know, amped up the kids' enthusiasm about, you know, doing well. They're like, I want to get honor roll. Because there's like a luncheon before, their parents are there, family's there. So I definitely think that's a huge positive that needs to be reemphasized.
Are the grade reports that you all do at your school, are they still the old-fashioned way, manual by hand, or is it all electronic?
Electronic.
Does the electronic allow you to put comments like attaboy, attagirl, those kind of things?
Yes.
Do parents really understand how to read the electronic? Because in the olden days, you could, you know, you put the smiley face, you could make the comment, and the parent, if they saw the grade card, they could kind of see that. Is part of this that parents need to be educated? Hey, the comments are on the electronic, you know, part of the grading thing?
One big thing I know I try to do is that I don't want the only time I interact with parents for good reasons to be at the report card time. So I know for me, I make an effort for every negative phone call I have to make about a child. I make sure to call two kids that have been doing well that week, because I feel like that does have such a huge impact on how students view themselves. And realistically, no child is perfect. They're going to make mistakes. And I think that relationship piece and that partnership is very important for this.
Is it also that even if you got a call a parent about a student that maybe has misbehaved, not doing well, also to say, but they're doing well in some other areas?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely critical to have both. If you're giving negative feedback or something about an opportunity to give positive feedback. I remember having a parent I called say to me that she had never in all of the 8 years her student had been at that school received a positive phone call. And I think from my experience, my school administration and leadership, now we make it critical that we are calling and making positive phone calls.
Should those kind of things be part of the evaluation of teachers and not just how your kids did on ISTEP or the ECA or the iRead? Though these other kinds of feedback things, should that be part of the evaluation? Hold that thought. We'll take a break. We'll be back with our remaining moments as After News with Amos after these.
239-1310, 239-1310 is After News with Amos. Patrick O'Donnell with Teacher America. He's executive director. I got a text message at 85620, keyword Amos, says, I'm a black male. I got a bachelor's in agricultural engineering technology, and I want to teach. Where do they go to take the first steps?
Great. Love it. Well, they can look at Teach for America for sure. So to be a Teach for America teacher, you don't actually have to have majored in education as an undergrad. We look for all majors. So someone who was an engineer can become a teacher with us. So I would just go to our website, which is teachforamerica.org, and the next application round will be in August.
Is there a blessing to be in Teach for America? Is there an incentive for people to do this?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say there's a couple things. I'd say the thing that motivates people most is that, you know, this is an opportunity to play a leadership role in solving what, you know, we believe is one of our country's greatest injustices, that kids in low-income communities are not given the same opportunity to have a great education as kids in high-income communities. So that's the number one motivation.
Mm-hmm.
But then along with that, too, I mean, people get to step, straight out of college and take on a major leadership role that I think is probably more challenging than anything that their peers are taking on.
Does it get your student loan torn up?
there is some financial incentive too. Yes, so folks receive an AmeriCorps award.
We're talking
loans. Yes.
The other thing I will ask you is, as we run out of time, when in my generation, when we grew up, there were things in popular culture on television that lifted up the profession of teaching. Back in the black and white days, it was our Miss Brooks. Then it was Mr. Novak. It was Room 227. Some would even say it was Welcome Back, Cotter, which lifted up teaching. The teacher was positive. The principal was always that's always the bad guy. Today, other than that doggone movie that got nothing at the box office, bad teacher that's already on my cable system. There really isn't anything today in popular culture that lifts up teaching. You can't do a reality show about a teacher because of the privacy rules for students. So how do young people like yourself, what motivated you quickly to be a teacher when there really wasn't those popular role models other than Hillary Swank? Who wants to go quickly?
I'll go. So for me, growing up in inner city Chicago and going to CPS schools, Chicago Public Schools, I've always known education to be the great differentiator between those in my community who were successful and those who became content with being unsuccessful. And so education has been something that I have been passionate about from the beginning. But for those folks who come into this work without having that passion early on, I think it's about knowing about organizations like Teach for America, where you can get involved and understanding the achievement gap and realizing the impact that you can have on your country and the world even.
And that was Judon Hemingway, teaches over at Fall Creek Academy. Keith Thomas, quickly.
What I was going to say about what made me become a teacher is I felt like it was somewhat of an obligation. I had certain skills that over the years that my math skills, they've always been really, 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 really good. And I just felt there was an opportunity. I had the energy and I had the skill set to be able to give back to the students in a way that they needed it.
Brittany Langdon, real quickly, at Kip.
So for me, as a first-generation college student, I knew that education was what has put me where I am now, and I feel just a moral obligation that it's my job and use my gifts and my skill sets to help every student be able to achieve that success.
Adam Jones over at IndyMet.
Well, my parents didn't graduate from college. They always stressed the importance of education, and it gave me a life full of choices, and I wanted to give back to the community and help others have a life full of choices.
And Stephen Philly, who's about to end his rookie year in Arlington.
Simply put, I wanted to teach, and I felt like Teach for America was the best way for me to do that.
All right, guys, thank you all very, very much for spending, an hour or so of your spring break when we know you really wanted to go, just chill out and sleep and do whatever. Guys, thank you all very, very much. Thank you, Patrick O'Donnell with Teach for America.